I'm Carrie Fountain, and this is Just to Say, where we talk to poets about the poems they make and the poems they love.
Poetry springs forth from authentic human voice.
Poetry's about anarchy, it's about mystery, it's about dreams, it's about, you know, the unknown.
Writing is a way of saying that you and the world have a chance.
The mother. The mother is a weapon you load yourself into, little bullet. The mother is glass through which you see in excruciating detail yourself. The mother is landscape. See how she thinks of a tree and fills a forest with the repeated thought. Before the invention of cursive, the mother is manuscript. The mother is sky. See how she wears a shawl of starlings, how she pulls it, thrumming, around her shoulders. The mother is a prism. The mother is a gun. See how light passes through her. See how she fires.
Thank you so much, Maggie, for reading that poem to us.
Of course. I'm so glad you picked that one. It's an odd little list of metaphors poem. So
yeah,
I'm glad you picked that one. I feel like I haven't talked as much about this poem as I have about some others.
Does it resonate with you, the idea that it is a series of metaphors, but it does sort of have that rhetorical sense of like, I'm going to establish what the mother is?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was thinking like, okay, how do I introduce certain images in the beginning? And then how do I like twist and play those out going through the poem? I think I knew I wanted to end on the idea of the prism in the gun. Mm-hmm. But in the earlier iterations of this poem, it was the mother is a prism. See how light passes through her. Mm-hmm. The mother is a gun. See how she fires, which mm-hmm. kind of makes more sense, mm-hmm. having those things together. And I actually, in revising the poem, liked the sort of weirdness of having them paralleled but split.
Yes, and you know, I was thinking about that as I was reading the poem as well. And I think, the mother is a prism. See how light passes through her. The mother is a gun. See how she fires. I love that you've separated the first two sort of metaphors and put them together and then have the other two, similes, that's same metaphors. But I love the way that it resists also the kind of child book, like the mother is a prism. See how light passes through her. The mother is it resists
yes.
that, and it makes it really complicated. You know, your reader does
a lot
more work there at the end. And I think, you know, sometimes when you can resist the temptation as a poet to sort of say, you see what I did at the end? Did you get the meaning of my poem? You know, you sort of resist that.
That's, you know,
and your reader does a little bit more work. And in doing that little bit more work, it's like, ah. Oh. Yes. You know, it really ends so strongly.
Oh, thank you.
And when you were composing this poem, I'm just curious to know how a poem like this comes together. Was it longer and you made it shorter? Was it shorter and you made it longer? Did it take a lot of time? You know, some poems take years. Some poems take, you know, I don't know, a few drafts. I've never experienced that. All my poems take years. But some people write.
Years, yeah. No, I mean, this one started out shorter than this. Mm. It really started out with the idea of the bullet and the gun. That was how the poem began. And then I sort of thought, like, well, it's also kind of a prism, because we see ourselves. I mean, I really approached this poem first from the perspective of a daughter. Mm. And the way that we see ourselves through our mothers, and how that like view of ourselves gets refracted in kind of strange and sometimes problematic ways that way. And so I started with those images, the prism and the gun. And then I thought, well, it's not really long enough. Like, I actually need more to this poem for that return to feel like a return and not just something that's over really quickly. And so I thought a little bit more about it and was thinking about sort of like sky and landscape and the parent. The parent is sort of like backdrop for everything, like how you kind of can't escape your upbringing. It just sort of becomes the weather for everything going forward. And actually, I was thinking of my mother's handwriting, which is where the cursive line came in, because she's a lefty, and her signature was always impossible for me to forge. because it's like really, really particular, really particular cursive handwriting. And so I was thinking about that and about how as children we learn print first and then we graduate to cursive. So it was just sort of meditating on all these different things. So this one for me is a lot about what it is to be a daughter. But of course, like I'm a hinge, and throughout this book, I'm a hinge. So I am the daughter of a mother, and I'm also the mother of a daughter. And it's kind of impossible to inhabit one of those spaces without immediately and automatically inhabiting the other space.
I just reread the poem as you were speaking, because my experience of this poem was perhaps too simplistically from in thinking about being maybe narcissistically is the, you know, the sort of a poem about becoming a parent or being the mother, you know, the sort of like, oh, all of a sudden, you know, I am the landscape and the, you know,
yes,
the tree and fills that's the forest
there too,
with the repeated
though, I
thought,
think.
You know, the sort of thought of like what, you know, I have become a landscape, and what will the forest, you know, fill? I'm going to fill a forest with all of, you know, the things that we, our hopes and our thoughts and our worries about our children, you know, and these things that we have.
Yes. I mean,
made
it's, you're the creator.
But now that I've read it with the, through the lens of, like you just said, being a daughter or any, you know, any child looking at their mother, it's a very different experience, but just as meaningful and just as powerful. But it's so funny the way that a poem can be itself like a prism, you know? You see in it.
Oh, yes.
What you need, perhaps, or what you are. You know, you maybe go toward it to find a definition of yourself, even if the definition that you were working from in the beginning was a definition of the mother as from the perspective of a daughter. It's just, that's really one of the magical things about poems. I'm sure you've had the experience of having someone say to you about any poem, not this one poem in particular, but just, you know, any poem, you know, this poem is about, you know, this poem is about God. When you just think, wow, it is. That was not where I, that's not really how I experienced it. That's just like one of the pleasures of being a poet, right? You get to see how other people experience the experience that you have created, you know?
Right. And sometimes we don't know. I mean, I honestly oftentimes think my poems are smarter and know what they're doing more than I know what I'm doing via the poem. So it's always interesting to kind of not know and sort of be, you know, feeling along the wall in the dark while I'm writing the thing, and then to either read it myself afterwards or show it to someone else and have them sort of give me their take afterwards and think, oh, that was what I was making. And it's sort of like, you know, doing a jigsaw puzzle, but with having no image on a box so that you don't actually know what it is that you're building while you're building it. And then you have to sort of back up away from it to see the shape of the thing that you made. And it may not be at all what you thought you were making,
right?
Which is one of the joys, I think, of doing it.
Yes. Yeah. And then as you continue, if you continue writing, and I don't know, you seem like someone who's been writing for a very long time. Did you start writing in your early 20s or teens?
As a teenager?
Or,
Yeah. I've been writing for, longer than I care to remember.
I want to get some of those teenage poems. We should all, like, bury them together in a box that will never be opened.
Yeah. Yes. But, and have, like, a a big burning ceremony.
Yes, right, exactly. But the sort of sense that you can get from yourself if you continue to make things throughout a career, you know, perhaps you're at a point in your career when you can look back to poems that were actually published, the poems that are in the world, and think, wow. Like, I have no idea who the person is that wrote that poem anymore. Like, I could never, I don't know if you have that experience of some of the, or your
Like, looking at some of the poems from my first book, and I think, oh, I felt that way, or I would, like, now it would never occur to me to describe that thing in that way. Like, those words, I wouldn't put those words together in that way at 40. In that, in the way that I did at 22. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just wouldn't occur to me. But also, sometimes I'll be digging through a notebook or a Word file and find something that I've written and forgotten about. Do you do this? Mm-hmm. And you have no recollection. You're like, I wrote this? I mean, I guess I did, because it's like in Garamond on my computer and it doesn't have anyone else's name on it. So I guess it's mine, but I actually don't. I it's really hard to sort of conjure the headspace that that poem was created in. Mm-hmm. And it might not even be that old.
And that's what poetry, and being a poet and being a writer and even just being a person in the world, you know, like Whitman was right. We contain multitudes, right? We can be different people.
Yes.
And I don't think that's necessarily just an experience of poets. I think that's just an experience of being, you know. And I think that's
sometimes absolutely. We just have our beingness recorded.
Right, exactly.
Right? So we have, like, actual evidence of our beingness that we obsessively jot down all the time.
Exactly, and that people read. And then sometimes people, you know, give appraisals of that.
Yes. And there's that.
So I just wanted to quickly, before I ask you about or ask you to share a poem, this is fun because I don't know what poem you're going to share. Before I ask you about that, I just feel like, I know that you probably get this question so often in interviews, but it really is such a remarkable thing to have happened that you had a poem, your poem, Good Bones, was a viral, I hate that word, sensation, and was, like, just distributed on the internet, in social media. It just became such a phenomenon, right? And I just wanted to know from you, like, poet to poet, what is that experience like of being a poet who has been, I mean, I've been following your work for a long time. I know that that's not the first poem you've ever written, right? You know, so right. The experience of, like, suddenly people being like, oh, she exists. And she, you know, like, being known for one poem. Like, what is that experience like? And what has it been like in the year or so since that experience happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly strange, as you can imagine. Like, just, I was talking to grad students this past week in Arizona, and I was saying, you know, like, imagine you're, you know, doing your MFA, and you go to a coffee shop, and you jot down a poem pretty quickly, and you send it out, and it's rejected by a few magazines at first, and then it gets accepted and slated for publication 9 months away, and you just forget about it because it's just one of the 50 poems you wrote that year. And then the week that the poem happens to be published online in kind of an upstart, relatively new journal, tragedies happen on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean. And for some reason, your poem happening to be on Facebook and on Twitter at that time seemed to speak to that moment. Mm-hmm. And everyone just starts sharing it, and it goes to countries that you've never been. Mm-hmm. And it's now in languages that I can't even read or understand. So I just have to take people's word that that's my poem that they're showing me in Korean or Bengali. And because I really have no idea. It could just be like a curse word repeated over and over and over again. I would have no idea. It's incredibly strange. And I mean, yes, it was really exciting and shocking and also gratifying, because you're kind of used to the freedom. The beautiful freedom of being a poet is that you don't make money and no one knows who you are. So you can do your own art without worrying about having to make a product. Mm-hmm. Because no one's buying it. So mm-hmm. it's not like writing pop songs where you have a manager or someone who's like, well, that last one was a hit. So you should mm-hmm. probably
duplicate
use the same, right. you know, bass line. Yeah, mm-hmm. you should do
Method.
That again.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful freedom of poetry is that you can do whatever you want, because the audience is limited enough that you have that freedom. And so that was really strange to have something that everyone seemed to have read, and not just poets, but like poets' mothers and aunts and neighbors.
Right.
and,
right.
I mean, but also complicated, because I don't want to necessarily be typecast mm-hmm. as writing a, you know, really specific kind of poem. And I've said before, like when my social media mentions start going really crazy, I can't. My first instinct is never, oh, how wonderful, people are sharing my poem. My first instinct is, and kind of has to be, oh no, what happened?
Mm. Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And so I have, right. I mean, mm-hmm. because people are sharing it because something bad has happened. Mm-hmm. So I have to go and look on the news or follow a thread and find out what, like, mass shooting has happened mm. in what part of the world. Mm. And then I kind of go into like condolences
oh.
mode in my social media, where I'm thanking people for sharing the poem, but it's not, I can't be like, wow, great, heart eyes emoji, thanks
right.
for sharing my work.
Yeah, you didn't write a
Valentine
poem.
That's not the spirit in which it's being shared.
Yeah.
No, it's not a poem that people share when children are born or people
right.
get married.
Right.
It's a poem that people share in like collective grief.
And solace.
And that is its own kind of, mm-hmm. It's like weirdly problematic mm-hmm. for me not to feel kind of guilty about having some kind of success being tied to pain, mm. really, other people's pain.
That is
so it's
so
it's
interesting.
Been like very good and very troubling mm-hmm. at the same time.
That is I had not thought of that part of it, that you sort of can know that there's a moment happening that where like people are going to something for solace and you have to sort of go, oh God, what happened? People are sharing my poem.
Yeah.
That's funny. Our first guest on the show is Naomi Shihab Nye, who also has a poem that has not
yes.
quite gone. And like this experience of poems going viral is like bonkers. Like this isn't something that happens. So, but she also, that poem, Gate 1A, about being in the Albuquerque airport
yes.
and the, you know, does anybody speak Arabic? You know that some, you know, it's a kind of a different poem for a different kind of like, oh, what the hell happened in the world? But, you know,
right.
it's the same, yeah, this the same experience. Okay. What will you do after you hang up the phone? What did we interrupt you doing this morning?
Oh, I am reading submissions for the Best New British and Irish Poets Anthology, which I'm judging this year. So I've just been in Submittable reading poems by UK poets who don't have a full-length book out yet to put together the anthology for Eyewear. And my Boston Terrier is snuggled up next to me on the couch.
Right now. There's
right
a Boston
now.
Terrier in our midst.
Mm-hmm.
That's lovely.
There's a Boston Terrier next to me. I actually kind of wondered when there was a swirling sound in the audio earlier. I was like, oh my gosh, how loud is she breathing? She can get a little snuffly and snory because of that smushed up little face. But it wasn't her. I was really glad because I like sitting with her.
That's very funny. Like something that you just like, oh, do I just not hear that? Does my dog make a whirling
yeah.
sound and I've just grown accustomed to it?
Yeah, she's actually whirling. She's humming.
Yeah. So I would love for you to share with us a poem that you love as much as the poem that I shared of yours that I love. What is a poem that just, you know, you would love to share with the world that means a lot to you?
Well, I chose a poem from Kathy Fagan's book, The Charm, And it's a poem called Little Bad Dream Charm. And it's all about the sort of mishearings and slippages in language. And I just love it. And I'll say I chose it. I was digging it up because this is one of those poems, when I read it, I thought, oh, you can do that in a poem? Like the sense of play with language? Like, oh, you can be like a little tricky. And it sort of cracked things opened for me when I was in graduate school. So this is the one. This is Kathy Fagan's Little Bad Dream Charm. It has an epigraph from Georgia O'Keeffe. We haven't found enough dreams. We haven't dreamed enough. Mm. I just woke up from a start afternoon nap. I dreamed of whole time. I dreamed I woke up lists of times. I wanted to make up because all my drears were nightmares. The only reason I thank I'm awake now is that I'm still sleepy. I dreamed about goldfish, except they were boys, and there were hundreds of ether boys, some so tinny they were trapped in the weave of a green carpet that shone like water or glass. See, that's why it was a bad dream. They were all dying because they were leafing out of their tanks. I had scooped them up and threw them back into any whaler I could find. I had stuffed even two plastic caps full. And then, in order to save as many lines as I could, I scooped a whole bunch into an aquarium, all at once. And that's what they became soddenly, enormous carrots sinking to the bittern of the dark.
What an amazing poem. What an amazing poem to hear read out loud without having the text in front of you as well, because you sort of discover that little thing that she's doing where she's, and it does, it seems like a dream, you know, like where things in a dream are just like a little off. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's
like close
great.
Enough that you know what the analogous thing is. Like in this case, it's the analogous word or the analogous image. Mm-hmm. But in a dream, it's like, I knew it was my house, but it wasn't my house.
Right.
Or you were you, but your hair was different and you spoke only Italian.
Yeah.
And this has that same kind of just off feel where it's, you can hear what the word should be, but it isn't that word.
Right. You experience it as you're experiencing the poem, you know, it feels like the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I hate to like hang up just immediately after we're done, but we have another interview the person's going to call in.
No worries.
So sorry, but I will email you and just, you know, heap thanks and praise upon you. And thank you
much. Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me to do it.
And I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Take care all.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You can find Maggie Smith's poem, The Mother, and other wonderful poems in her collection, Good Bones. This is Just to Say is produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. I'm Carrie Fountain. Thanks for listening.